I'm Duncan Strauss. Really delighted to be bringing you another edition of Talking Animals, in which we'll discuss all aspects of living with rabbits with our guest Lana Lair of RabbitWise, Inc. First, though, as always, we're kicking off the show with the rabbit-relevant animal tune from Pete Seeger. This is Mr. Rabbit here on Talking Animals.
Mr. Rabbit, Mr. Rabbit, your ears are mighty long. Yes, don't you know they were put on wrong? Every little soul's gonna shine, shine. Every little soul's gonna shine along. Mr. Rabbit, Mr. Rabbit, your nose always twitches. Yes, don't you know it always itches. Every little soul's gonna shine, shine. Every little soul's gonna shine along. Mr. Rabbit, Mr. Rabbit, your tail's so tight. Yes, don't you know it was put on right. Every little soul's gonna shine, shine. Every little soul's gonna shine along. Mr. Rabbit, Mr. Rabbit, where you been? Down to Mr. Angelo's garden. Every little soul's gonna shine, shine. Every little soul's gonna shine along. Mr. Rabbit, Mr. Rabbit, what do you eat? Carrots and cabbages from my head to my feet. Every little soul's gonna shine, shine. Every little soul's gonna shine along. Mr. Rabbit, Mr. Rabbit, your ears are so long. Yes, don't you know they were put on wrong? Every little soul's gonna shine, shine. Every little soul's gonna shine along.
All right. That was Pete Seeger with Mr. Rabbit, an animal song of sorts to ease us into today's edition of Talking Animals. My name's Duncan Strauss, here with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. In just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with today's guest, Lana Lair, the founder and managing director of RabbitWise, Inc., a Washington, D.C.-based national organization that seeks to promote greater awareness and education about domestic rabbits and enhance their welfare. We'll discuss all manner of rabbit topics, pegged to the fact that this Sunday, September 25th, is International Rabbit Day. I'm serious. We'll speak with Lana Lair in a few moments here on Talking Animals. And as usual, we'll also welcome your questions and comments at 813-239-9663 or by email at dj@wmnf.org. Also, a bit later in the show, we'll step into the Comedy Corner, which involves animal comedy. We'll hear a piece from Good One, the new CD by Tig Notaro. Play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will actually receive a copy that Tig Notaro CD. And again, with our fun drive just a few weeks ahead now, coming up shortly, you're going to start October 12th. So with that in mind, we'll be offering a pair of tickets to see TV on the Radio, the great, great acclaimed band from Brooklyn, performing at Janus Live on October 22nd for a pledge of $80. And let's say you already have your tickets or for some reason not interested in going to see TV on the Radio. Here's another way you can help us get a huge head start on our fun drive here at Talking Animals. You go to the Talking Animals page. Go to WMNF.org. Find the Wednesday schedule. Look at 11 a.m., of course. And click on that. Take us to the Talking Animals page in the upper right-hand corner. It's our tip jar. Appreciate it if you could put in $25, $50, $100. More if you can swing it. But it'll all help and support WMNF and Talking Animals efforts on the fun drive. Coming up starting again on October 12th. That very day, we'll be raising money here on Talking Animals. So, any help you can give will be tremendously appreciated. Right now, though, it's time for the Animal News and Announcements segment, a look at the items of interest in animal news, as well as announcements of local events on the horizon, produced, as always, by the Talking Animals, award-winning Rip and Read News Department. Our first item is both sort of international news and comes from just up the road a piece, really. Took this one from a Reuters report. It says the SeaWorld killer whale that drowned his trainer in 2010 in Orlando, Florida, was known for refusing to let go of objects he found in his pool, a senior trainer said on Tuesday in a federal hearing. But a SeaWorld executive in the same hearing defended the safety of close human contact with killer whales and noted that the company had recorded just one other trainer death before Don Bronchot was drowned in the park in front of guests in 2010. SeaWorld is challenging federal safety charges against the resort that stem from the drowning of 40-year-old Bronchot, who was pulled underwater by Tilikum, a 12,000-pound orca bull, in front of park guests. The most serious charge leveled by the Department of Labor's Occupational Safety and Health Administration, or OSHA, is classified as, quote, willful violation, meaning SeaWorld showed, quote, plain indifference to or intentional disregard for employees' safety and health. Theme park company faces a $75,000 fine. More importantly, SeaWorld might be forced to end physical interaction between trainers and killer whales. Company lawyer Carla Gunn said in her opening statement on Monday, performances at SeaWorld's Shamu Stadium long featured iconic moments of trainers surfing on the backs of killer whales and getting launched from the whales' snouts. But SeaWorld trainers have not performed or interacted in the water with killer whales since Bronchot's death, with one exception in a medical emergency. Senior trainer Lynn Schaber, called to testify by federal lawyers at the hearing in Sanford outside of Orlando, said trainers had to receive special approval from management to work with and touch Tilikum. West Hollywood has banned the sale of fur, the first city in the nation to do so. The Fur Free City Council unanimously approved the ban late Monday night. The city had already banned the sale of cats and dogs in pet stores and the decline of cats. Critics and business owners say the ban is an unconstitutional infringement on their freedoms. From my side of the state, found this notable in an article headlined, Dog Cat Euthanasias Fall 19%, the Palm Beach Post reports. The number of dogs and cats killed at Palm Beach County's animal shelter has plummeted by 19% over the past year, marking the first time the facility has been seen such a large dip since it opened in the late 1960s. Animal Care and Control Director Diane Sauve said the euthanasia rate for cats was down 24%, while the number of unwanted dogs killed dropped 3%, she said. Although the euthanasia rates fell slightly at the shelter in the 2000 budget year, she said this year's drop marks a turning point for her department. Quote, everything has finally clicked into place. We have turned a corner here. Animal control officials have spent years pressing spay and neutering campaigns across the county, especially for cats and large dogs, which are less likely to be adopted than smaller dogs. In 2008, she pushed for a series of new regulations that forced pet owners who haven't spayed or neutered their animals to pay higher licensing fees. The hobby breeders, also must have permits under the rules. In recent years, the department has worked with local veterinarians to host marathon surgery events to spay and neuter hundreds of cats, and the shelter recently received a $25,000 grant to help pay to spay and neuter large dogs. At least 20 large dogs are spayed and neutered all at the shelter every Monday. So, good results. Impressive combination of efforts there. On a more international front, Zimbabwe poachers turn to poisoning waterholes. This item from AP, passed along by Sean Cannon, our assistant public affairs and news director. Zimbabwe's wildlife authority says poachers have begun poisoning waterholes, killing 9 elephants and at least 5 lions in recent weeks. Spokesman Carolyn Oshayamoyo of Zimbabwe's wildlife department says elephants' ivory tusks were removed, but lions' heads and skins were left intact. She says the lions appear to be accidental victims of the poisoning. She told the Associated Press on Monday the new incidents were the first on record. She says buffalo were also killed, as were vultures that preyed on the dead animals. She says tests were being done to determine the nature of the chemicals that could kill creatures as large as elephants, which can eat hundreds of pounds of vegetation each day. All right, back more locally again. I want to give Another reminder about the upcoming Greyhound Support Transport Fall Picnic to be held Sunday, October 2nd, Eagle Lake Park, 1800 Keene Road in Largo. That's going to be at Shelter 2 from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. As for you, your four-legged friends, there'll be a barbecue, silent auction, raffle, and a few other things for good measure. All the funds raised by this event will benefit Greyhound Support Transport and moving retired Greyhounds to non-racing states. They are looking for RSVP if you think you'd like to go. Please email greyhoundsupporttransport@gmail.com. greyhoundsupporttransport@gmail.com. Also on the horizon, Gene Bauer, Farm Sanctuary President and Co-Founder, will be giving a talk at Grassroots Sunday, October 9th, 3 p.m. And this is a benefit, and food will be served. So there is a cost, and space is limited, and therefore there must have RSVPs. So go to Florida Voices for Animals to do so or for more information. But Gene does fantastic, been on the show a number of times, and heard him speak elsewhere, and just great, great. So that's October 9th right here in Tampa at Grassroots Organic Restaurant. And also coming up, second annual Tampa Bay Veg Fest, October 15th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at Cotenshobee, Fort Brooke Park, downtown Tampa. And be all kinds of exhibits, events, music, food, speakers, including Carol Leifer, who we've talked about in detail the recent weeks. She's fantastic. And all kinds of other details can be found at TampaBayVegFest.org. And one last thing to mark your calendar. Maybe we'll come back to some of the things if we have time towards the end of the show. But, of course, Stride for Strays, the 11th annual Stride for Strays, put on by Animal Coalition of Tampa, will take place October 23rd, Curtis Hickson Waterfront Park from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. And there'll be hundreds of dogs and their people doing a vigorous or leisurely 3K walk, and there'll be bands, performers, games, prizes, great food, and more. So find out more by going to actampa.org. All right, it's time now to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which involves animal-oriented comedy. This is Tig Notaro with a portion of a piece called Shark Attack on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
Punch him in the nose? Punch nose? Eyes? Eyes and gills. So you'd just be like rotating. You're like, boink, boink, boink. Gotcha. Yeah. So you'd be like, punch him in the nose and eyes and gills, eyes and gills. Oh, take that right in your eye, now in your gill. How does that feel? And then you just swim off after you took that shark down. Look at you taking charge in that big ocean. It's impressive. Eyes and gills. Well, that's what I thought, like, punching in the nose was what you're supposed to do. And then I was in Florida a couple of months ago, and I was talking to this guy about shark attacks, and he was like, yeah, actually what you do, and he said this with all seriousness, he was like, yeah, you just, you don't punch him in the nose, you just flip him upside down. You just flip the shark upside down and just stroke their bellies till they fall asleep. Can you imagine how mentally ill you would have to be if a shark was hovering in front of you and you're just like, oh yeah, just flip that over and just stroke its belly. And actually, every time I pictured defending myself in a shark attack, I pictured all of this going on like with air around, like above water. Like I would be like, yeah, I just punch him in the nose. Or just eyes and gills and eyes and gills. And now I've learned, oh, you just flip him over. But when I was talking to that guy while he was telling me that, I was like, oh yeah, this is going to happen underwater. So I'm going to be slowed down tremendously. So a shark's sitting there, and then I'm like, oh, I'm going to punch him in the nose. Well, it's going to be like... Like, by the time I get halfway to his nose, he's going to eat me.
All right. That was Taking the Terror with a portion of a piece called Shark Attack, taken from her new album, Good One, last week's It's the Music CD of the Week, and a copy of which will be given away later during Name That Animal Tune. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. Our website is talkinganimals.net. It's nearly time to speak with today's guest, Lana Lehr. As I touched on earlier, Lana is the founder and managing director of RabbitWise, Inc., a Washington, D.C.-based national organization that seeks to promote greater awareness and education about domestic rabbits and enhance their welfare. So we'll be having a conversation that I've dubbed Almost Everything You Always Wanted to Know About Rabbits. And the timing of the chat is pegged to this Sunday being the day we celebrate International Rabbit Day. With a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-966 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome Lana Lehr to Talking Animals. Good morning, Lana.
Good morning. How are you, Duncan?
I'm very well. Thank you so much for joining us on Talking Animals.
Well, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So I think there's a ton of information about rabbits that many folks, even those of us who really love and care passionately about animals, don't know. So one of the reasons I'm delighted to speak with you today is so we can start shoring up, or try to shore up, some of those huge gaps in our rabbit knowledge. In fact, let's start off just by asking, what's the single biggest misconception or just plain old lack of understanding that people have about rabbits or about living with rabbits?
Well, that they can live indoors with you and be litter box trained, and that they can form bonds with you and play games, and they're pretty interactive. And for all intents and purposes, they're somewhere between a cat and a dog.
That's the biggest misconception?
Well, by some estimates, they're the third most popular pet in the country. Not that you would know it. If you think about it, you don't see them mentioned too much in different animal organizations that are like shelters who are asking for money or donations or whatever. They just don't get the play that dogs and cats do, but they're a pretty popular pet.
Right, but I guess when I'm not clear, because you rattle off a bunch of things about them that I actually thought were true. But when you were answering a question about the biggest misconception or things that people don't understand, so I just want to clarify, are all those things you said then actually complete misconceptions that we all have about living with rabbits?
Probably not all, but I mean, okay. there's a lot of people who say, oh, really? You can litter box train them? Oh, really? You can have them inside? They're far more intelligent than I think most people give them credit for. That was one of my surprises when I had my first rabbit. It's like, he was really smart.
Okay, well, we want to delve into all these things and more, but maybe this is as good a time as any to first find out a little about RabbitWise itself. When was it founded, and why? What prompted it?
It was, I think, 2004. My first rabbit I adopted was a meat rabbit, and he was pretty traumatized and terrified. And as a psychotherapist, I decided to do a treatment plan for a human child with him, and it worked. And I was like, what don't I know?
Wow.
Yeah.
And what were some of the key elements of that plan that you devised for this rabbit?
It's the same thing you do for a human child. Very consistent, everything predictable, no loud noises, and then he was very fond of pieces of apples and pears and bananas. So if he wanted those, he had to come get them out of my hand. And I moved into the same room that he was in, so he had to deal with me.
Wow. And when was this? How long have rabbits been central to your life?
I got him in 2000.
Okay. And, okay, so you saw that plan worked, and then how did that sort of lead you on the path to becoming a rabbit advocate?
I got into rabbit rescue. I worked with a local rabbit rescue named Friends of Rabbits, who is now our sister organization because they have a foster network. And it was clear to me that if we didn't start addressing the bigger problems about why so many rabbits were available and going into shelters and things, that our grandchildren would be rescuing rabbits. So I started looking into it, and there really wasn't anybody that was focused on rabbits and advocating for them and all the issues that come up with them. You know, educating about how they should be cared for, bringing them indoors, not selling them for fur, that sort of thing. So, because they're intelligent beings and they're really pretty nice little guys to have around.
Sure. So what are some of the things then sort of at this point that you do to kind of spread the gospel of rabbitdom?
Well, we have classes called Rabbitology. We work nationwide with the shelters and other rabbit rescues. Our biggest, most important national thing is our Bunderground Railroad, which is a network of rabbit rescuers who make arrangements for placement and transportation when rabbits are in an emergency situation. Like if a shelter does a cruelty bust, which, I mean, the numbers of those that happen across the country are probably in the realm of 250 a year.
Wow.
Yeah, that involve rabbits. So let's say 28 rabbits come into a shelter, what pretty quickly overwhelms their resources.
Sure.
So when legally they're clear, meaning that they're not going back to their previous owner, that they are now up for adoption, if we don't get them out of there, they will probably be euthanized. Rabbits are the most third euthanized pet in the country, cats being number one, dogs being second, and then rabbits are third. So we try to find, you know, so we call up the rest of the country, we post an email and say, okay, who has space?
Mm-hmm.
If we can find a placement for them, we'll get them there. And we also respond to disasters. In Katrina, we rescued 28 rabbits out of Slidell and transported them across the southern part of the United States up into California, dropping them off as we went at their different homes.
Wow. So there really is a pretty, sounds like pretty highly developed network
mm-hmm.
of this sort of rabbit world that can step in and step up, really, to help out when there's a Katrina kind of situation or, like you say, just a big rescue situation where suddenly there's a lot of rabbits at one place and too many to probably stay there safely. So that's really impressive. Well, let me let folks know this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, we're speaking with Lana Lair, the founder and managing director of RabbitWise, Inc. If you'd like to join the conversation, ask Lana a question about rabbits or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663 or email dj at wmnf.org. So, okay, so let's get into something then, with all those rabbits, kind of floating around and at times many flooding into the system. Let's get into a bit of a tutorial, about, just the house rabbit world. And for our purposes, I guess that is what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
House rabbits, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the right
yes,
term.
Exactly.
Okay. And so, and it just means kind of what it sounds like. It means rabbits that do live in your house?
Uh-huh. In the house. Yes. I do not cage them.
Okay.
They have their little condos, but it's open. They have open space that they can go in or run around in. When I'm not there, the whole house is open to them when I am there. You do have to bunny-proof.
What's that involve exactly?
Well, it's like having a toddler. You don't want them to, you know, chew any wires. Keep them away from your computers. Some rabbits will chew on carpet. Some will chew on drywall. That's not too often. But you can teach them not to do it. My rabbits know what they're allowed to do and what they're not allowed to do. So the deal is, and this is what I tell them, I said, you don't chew in my antique furniture and you don't have to live in a cage, okay?
Mm. All right. Well, that seems like a fair deal.
Yeah. It takes a while, but they get it. They do get it. You have to work with them, but they get it.
And so how many rabbits do you have living with you? It sounds like
I have two right now.
Okay.
I had three, but one died
of
old age.
Okay. And how long do that raise, I guess, another obvious question. How long do rabbits typically live?
8 to 12 with good care
mm-hmm.
and kept indoors. My Muggins, the meat rabbit I told you about, he lived to be 12 and a half.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, and I have a 9-year-old now.
Wow, so they're getting good care and they're living a nice long life,
yes,
it sounds like.
Yes, they need routine vet care by a veterinarian that specializes in exotics. It's called, you know, for rabbit stuff. There's a lot of things you could do with dogs and cats that would kill a rabbit, so you have to take them to a special veterinarian. So you teach them how to live in your house, and you learn about their nutrition. They're not the most easy pet to have. They're often referred to as starter pets, which is erroneous. They have particular they're like horses in terms of their digestive
mm-hmm.
tract. And they're hindgut fermenters, and you have to be careful about what you feed them. You can't overload them with sugar. They go into GI stasis if they drink too or eat something that has too much gas producing whatever. And so you have to feed them a good quality pellet. You have to have hay around for them all the time. And you have to give them bunny salads in the morning and in the evening and make sure you don't give them the wrong things. You have to control their calcium a little bit, too.
And
so you have to get, like, a nutritional help. But
right.
If you're involved with a rabbit rescue, they help you with all that. It's on our website as well.
Right. Well, that's the thing. I was going to say the website is rabbitwise.org, and, like, just jam-packed with great info and resources, some of which obviously we'll get into today, but not all of which we could probably possibly cover in one conversation. But I believe you used the term bunny salad a moment ago.
Yes.
All right. Now, what exactly is a bunny salad?
Well, bunny salad, for my rabbits, it's a mixture of vegetables and herbs. They get bok choy, and they eat internationally, by the way.
I should hope so. They seem very cultured.
Yeah, they eat bok choy, spinach in small doses because it has high calcium. Both of them love broccoli, not a whole lot because those are gas-producing. Mm. Then they get some dill. They get some cilantro. They love basil. So that's all mixed together for them. And then they get a treat with their salads, either a small piece of carrot or a piece of banana or a piece of apple or a piece of pear.
Wow.
And then they have their pellets.
I'm coming over to your house for a bunny salad. That sounds great.
Yes,
but
it's all organic, too, but I'm a little over the top with it, but I take very good care of them.
Well, you wouldn't be on the show. You wouldn't be the rabbit-wise person if you weren't a little over the top. In fact,
yeah,
you know,
probably.
Well, I think, you know, as you've already made clear in explaining a lot of these things, I mean, you know, this is an important, serious mission to you, but you've also, I think, kind of hinted at least that you don't take it or yourself overly seriously. For example, we met at a conference in Washington,
right,
D.C., and you were wearing rabbit ears, and, you know, so right away, there's a little bit of a...
Well, you have to have fun with it.
Sure.
I mean, it should be fun.
You know? Absolutely.
So we try to bring fun with it. And rabbits are fun. There was an article in the Reader's Digest that discussed rabbits, and they talked about them as though they were cartoon characters come to life. And I think that's a very apt description of how they are.
Wow. Well, that sounds cool. Mm-hmm. So one of the things then, I guess, because you're obviously living with two rabbits, but not, it sounds like, with other animals as well. Is that correct?
I live two places. I live in the city in a condo, and then on the weekends I live on the farm, and there are 8 horses, 1 dog, 2 cats, and my 2 rabbits.
Okay, so that gets me at least into my key question here, which is how do the two rabbits get along with the dog and cat side of things?
Well, Cassidy walks all over Orion, the dog. Cassidy's the rabbit, and Orion's the dog, and Orion just kind of lays there. Orion can't be bothered chasing anything. He's a golden retriever.
Oh. Wow.
Chloe, on the other hand, is very circumspect about any other animal than a rabbit.
Oh, yeah.
Or a human. So she kind of avoids them. And they're very individual in how they handle things. The cats pretty much ignore them, and the rabbits ignore the cats. I don't know why that is. But I'm told often that in multi-animal families, the rabbit is in charge.
Well, okay, so then let me ask you this, because it sounds like everybody's, you know, peacefully coexisting in your household or households. But let's say, like in our case, we have a few cats and a dog, and if we were to introduce a rabbit in, obviously that rabbit would be new.
Mm-hmm.
Would that rabbit still be fine? Would they still ultimately sort of take charge, or is it different if the rabbit's introduced after there's already kind of a little animal community?
Well, with a dog, the dog views a new addition as a pack member, typically. And if they're not a dog that's bred to hunt rabbits, you can pretty much train them to be okay. Cats, if they're real predatory, you got to watch out. And the rabbit, a lot of them, some of them are just really full of themselves and say, you know, I run the show, and who are you?
Wow. Okay. I like that attitude. That's good.
Yeah, you wouldn't think of them, but they're like that.
When they're newly introduced to the household, they pretty quickly exert their...
Well, you have to do a process with that. You know, have everybody on a leash when you're first introducing them.
Okay.
And I wouldn't leave them alone and unsupervised. But if you're there, I think they could probably run around. You know, mine run around the dog.
Okay.
When we're there.
And did the dog come after your rabbits or
he can't be bothered.
Okay. Yeah. No, I just wondered about the sequence.
No, Cassidy goes and stands on his back, and he just can't be bothered.
Right. Okay, well, cool. Well, let's take a call, and then if I have any more questions, and I'm sure other people probably do too. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Lana Laird. Do you have a question about rabbits?
Hi, guys. I just wanted to share an experience and kind of ask a question at the end.
Okay.
Very reluctantly, I allowed a rabbit into our home. My wife and daughter conspired against me to bring home a lion head, and she was a beautiful animal. And we were told by the pet shop that they don't live very long, that she'd probably be with us for about 2 years. And she just passed this weekend. She lived 5 years, and she was an amazing pet. But I was curious if you had any experience with the breed, and you know, were they just selling it short so that if we were terrible, disastrous bunny owners, like many first-timers would be, apparently, was the pet store selling us short on the life of the breed, or are they really that short-lived?
Well, the first thing is you went to a pet store to get an animal, which is never a good idea because those animals come from rabbit mills, puppy mills, whatever the animal you're getting, and they are interbred.
Well,
which
one preface there, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but this is a small mom and pop, and they claim to be responsible with where they get their animals. They don't do cats and dogs, and they claim to be very responsible with where they get all of their animals.
Well, then the other thing
with this one.
The other thing with a particular breed, you still get them interbred, and they're not as strong genetically and stuff. We don't typically we refer to rabbits as JARs, just a rabbit. We don't really focus much on the breed unless somebody has an allergy or something like that. The Lionheads, I don't know of any data or any information that says that they wouldn't live as long as any other rabbit. Was it a small bunny?
Yes, very small.
Yeah, they don't live quite as long as some of the bigger ones.
She was a joy to have.
Pardon me?
She was a joy to have.
They're lovely critters.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much for your call. Mm-hmm. Okay, so continuing our symposium on perhaps everything, or almost everything you wanted to know about rabbits. Let's talk too then about kids with house rabbits. Because I know that if they're a certain age, at least I gather, that that's not necessarily a great fit.
That's not a great idea.
So what age is okay, and why isn't it generally a good okay below that age?
12 and over.
Okay.
Rabbits are prey animals, so they can scare fairly quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Some have been known to be literally frightened to death. And they have very lightweight bones, which can break somewhat easily because they need to run fast and get away. And small children are clumsy with animals, and the rabbit's going to struggle when it's picked up. And kids are very inclined to say, but it doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
You know, so they lose interest pretty quickly. The 12-year-old usually is a more responsible person at that particular point in time and can handle learning how to pick them up, you know, taking care of them and all that sort of thing. But because they do live 8 to 12 years, if your 12-year-old is going to college, the rabbit can't go to college with the kid, so the parents need to be pretty clear that they're going to continue to have the rabbit live with them after the child goes off to school.
Right. Okay. Well, that makes sense. And something else you just mentioned I think is also really important for many people who aren't so far steeped in the rabbit world, which is because they are prey animals, they really don't like to be touched or held or picked up.
A lot of them don't.
Yeah.
But my Cassidy betrays all that. He'll sit on the edge of a sofa and jump into my arms if I go by.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, he's a lover. Some of them are. But, you know, they while they might not like to be picked up, they're pretty content to sit beside you and be petted for a while.
Okay. You know? All right. Mm-hmm. Well, these are all important things to know because I think so much of this is about making really informed kind of decisions and choices
right.
when you decide
Chloe will watch TV.
Oh, yeah? All right. What's her favorite program doing?
Animal Planet, of course.
Of course. That was silly me. Okay. So, now one thing you mentioned in our very sort of beginning, part of the conversation is about rabbits and litter boxes. I mean, how do house rabbits use litter boxes and how comparable is that to the way cats, use litter boxes?
It's pretty comparable. You can't use the same kind of litter. You can't use clumping litter with rabbits, and you can't use anything that's pine or cedar because the phenols in those things do cause liver toxicity, so you wouldn't want to do that. But you can get the recycled paper. Mine have big litter boxes that are, the bigger ones, not the smaller ones that you can get at any pet store. Line it with newspaper, and then I put in the litter, and then you put in hay. So they're kind of like sitting on the john, you know, reading a newspaper, except they munch hay.
Okay. And what, I mean, like the kind of hay that horses would enjoy, or is this kind of a more specialized form of hay?
Yeah, mine eats what the horses enjoy now. It's timothy, orchard grass. Alfalfa is considered a treat because it's very high sugar, high protein, so you want to give that to baby bunnies and just as a treat. But mostly timothy hay is the one that's usually pretty much recommended.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And, again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Lana Lehrer, the founder and managing director of RabbitWise, Inc., and we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing dj@wmnf.org. So Lana, then, should house rabbits only live inside, or are some breeds okay to spend some time outside, or how does that work?
We are of the point of view that rabbits need to live indoors.
Okay.
They have to live outdoors. Their lives are seriously shortened because of their bodies having to adjust to the constant changes in weathers, the heat and the cold. They don't do well over about 72 degrees.
Mm.
They can really die of heat strokes. And then, you know, you have to spend a lot of energy staying warm. Flies can lay their eggs on the rabbit, and then they end up with a thing called fly strike, and that's pretty much a death warrant.
Yeah, that doesn't sound good.
Yeah, and then it's a lot of fleas. And if you have them outside, raccoons will dig out the bottoms of the cages, and sometimes we've had rabbits where they've had their feet chewed off. And
yikes!
Yeah, and every year around here there are rabbits killed by raccoons that live outside. So it's just not what we would recommend.
All right, I think we've answered the outdoor question with great detail.
Yeah,
yikes. Okay. So, now you obviously live with two, at one time three rabbits. Are they pretty social? In other words, do they sort of need to be at least in pairs or more, or is it okay to have a solitary rabbit? Or
it's okay to have a solitary rabbit, but it's not ideal. I lived in Chile for a while, and I remembered when I would see another American, I would run up and say, "Oh, you're an American, please talk to me." So I figured it's kind of similar to that. You know, it's like, I'm not a rabbit.
Well, you're very close, though,
yeah,
frankly.
Yeah, I'm close. Yeah, yeah. I can speak rabbit, but I'm still not a rabbit. So I think they like having another of their own kind around. My two seem to like that. I've got them so that they would have another rabbit to be with.
So is that generally then with some of the rescues or other places where people might adopt a house rabbit from, is that the kind of the recommendation? Hey, why don't you make it two?
Well, the other thing too is that if a rabbit has another rabbit buddy, then they're not as interested in looking for wires to chew and whatever mischief they can find. I mean, they'll sit around and they'll groom one another and play with one another. So
keeps them out of trouble.
Yeah, yeah. Keeps them out of trouble.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's take another call. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Lana Lehrer. Hello, it's you. Oh, okay. I guess they're gone. Maybe they'll call back. But so Lana, I don't know if you've heard this at all, that rabbits have a reputation for reproducing rapidly and in large numbers. I don't know if I'm breaking this to you, but what is the recommended practice that would be the counterpart to spay and neuter, you know, in the dog and cat world when it comes to rabbits?
Well, you can spay and neuter rabbits, and if you go to a rescue, you don't get a rabbit that's not spayed or neutered, because they are what's called induced ovulators, the females.
Mm.
So when they get around a boy bunny that they like and they get together, they're pregnant within about 10 seconds. And in 30 days, they'll deliver 6 to 8 new bunnies. And P.S., she can get pregnant with a second litter while she's still pregnant with the first.
Wow.
Yeah, so unless you want to have rabbits rolling the house, you need to get them spayed and neutered. And if they're not going to be bred, in which we hope there aren't, since we are killing so many what's called excess animals, we'd rather not see them have more added.
Right.
Then the female rabbits, they get uterine cancer within 3 years if they're not spayed. They're at risk for that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And
so yet another incentive then, really.
Right, exactly. And then the male bunnies, if they don't have a female rabbit around to court you and they're not neutered, or court them, you know, to court, they will court you if they're not neutered. They run circles around your legs.
And, wow, that could be awkward. Yeah.
Well, you're the only game in town, so, you know.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Yeah.
So, but again, it sounds like if someone were going to be doing the right thing, i.e. adopt versus buy, that mm-hmm. they probably wouldn't really be in a position to do so without having their the rabbit come already spayed or neutered.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It's not always, but it's
typically
pretty much, most reputable rescues will have the rabbit spayed and neutered before you get it, which is also helpful because they know how to handle the surgery. For the male rabbit, it's not a big deal, but for the female rabbit, it's an abdominal surgery.
Sure. Okay, well, I have other things I want to chat with you, but I want to work on at least one of our other email questions here. This one says, was wondering if today's guest might want to address splayed leg syndrome or something like that. A friend's dwarf bunny with one splayed leg. If the problem had been caught sooner before my friend acquired the bunny, it could have been surgically corrected.
I think that's probably a better question for a vet. I mean, possibly corrected. You have to know some things. Like, was it genetic? Is it spinal? Is it muscular? I can't answer that.
Okay. All right. Well, that's that will next time we have a vet on that knows something about rabbits, we'll ask that question then. So, all right. Well, we just have a moment or two probably remaining, Lana. But so let's talk about International Rabbit Day. It might be a measure of my immaturity that I'm amused by both the phrase and the idea of International Rabbit Day. So tell us about this day and how rabbit the devotees celebrate International Rabbit Day.
Well, the Brits came up with it. International Rabbit Day is September 25th.
Yeah, Sunday.
And
yeah.
As Rabbit Wise got going and we were trying to proselytize about rabbits, I was looking around for different things to raise awareness. So we just decided we were going to start celebrating International Rabbit Day. And we might go do a class someplace or set up a booth somewhere. We always do something. This year we'll be participating in the Veg Fest in Washington, D.C., and we have a poster that says, "Adopt a Rabbit, We're Vegetarian." So we do stuff like that.
Sure. All right, so this is kind of a nice sort of, peg for something to sort of further promote or call attention.
Yeah, relations.
Yeah.
Let's learn about rabbits.
Sure. Well, I like it, and I like the fact that it's international. So,
yeah.
So Lana, what's at this point, I mean, obviously your enthusiasm is clear and infectious probably even about house rabbits. What's the single sort of best thing about living with rabbits?
Oh, my.
You can fudge and come up with two if you have to.
They greet me at the door, mainly because they know they're going to get a treat. Whatever, they greet me at the door. Cassidy will jump up on my bed in the morning and wake me up. They're loving, fun creatures. They do a thing called the Bunny 500. They'll just get a wild hare and go flying up the hallway at 50 miles an hour.
Wow. For no rhyme or reason, they just suddenly kick into gear.
They do these things called binkies. Matter of fact, my pharmacist knew that because I had asked her a couple of questions about could I use this particular solution on a rabbit. And so she got a rabbit and she was asking me questions. And she says, he jumps up and kind of twists. It looks really funny. Is there a neurological problem? I said, no, it's a happy rabbit. It's called a binky.
That's just joy. That's just plain old joy is what that is. Yeah. Well, that's great. Well, again, I mean, I think we've gotten a great further glimpse into life with rabbits. And, again, it sounds, as you noted, it's not, it's not without its own specific challenges, but it also sounds like huge, huge rewards as well.
It's well worth it. They're really loving little critters, and they're funny, and they're just nice to be around.
Cool. Well, this has been Lana Lehrer from RabbitWise, and the website is rabbitwise.org. And great, again, great resources, all kinds of information. Anything you might possibly want to know along the lines of what we discussed and many things we just didn't get a chance to discuss. There's also RabbitWise is on Facebook as well. So lots of great info. And thanks for joining us today. Happy International Rabbit Day in advance. And thanks for joining us today on Talking Animals.
Well, you're quite welcome. Thanks for having me. And everybody, go out and love a rabbit.
All right. Sounds great. Thanks, Lana.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
I'm Duncan Strauss. You are listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. There'll be a prize, a copy of the new Tignataro CD. Good one. A piece of which we heard earlier in the Comedy Corner. The first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this relevant animal tune. It's named an animal tune. Talking Animals.
One pill makes you larger, and one pill makes you small, and the ones that mother gives you Scarlet, when she's 10 feet tall.
All right. Well, perhaps people will call in and name that animal tune off the air or on. But right now, I just want to remind you again that the WMF Fall Fun Drive starts very shortly, October 12th. And if you'd like to help WMF and Talking Animals get a jump on our fundraising, we'd like to offer you a pair of tickets to see TV on the Radio, the great, great acclaimed band based in Brooklyn. They're performing at Janice Live October 22nd. And we're going to hear an animal song from them in a moment. But, gosh, the phone lines have lit up like crazy here, so we're going to take them in order to see if people can indeed. Hi, can you name that animal, too?
Yeah, White Rabbit.
Yeah, very good. All right, what is your first name, sir?
Bob.
Bob? Okay, Bob, I'm going to put you back on hold to get your information and send you off the copy of Tig Notaro's new CD, Good One. You are our winner. Congratulations.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Thank you. Stay on hold. Okay, folks, everyone else that's on those lines, we do have a winner. Bob was the one that knew. Of course, it was White Rabbit. So, anyway, let's hear this little bit of a animal song from TV on the Radio. Again, holding forth locally here. Janice Live, October 22nd, for a pledge of $80. We'll give you tickets to see that. 813-239-9663. Also, if you just don't want to do that necessarily, but want to support us in advance of the fund drive, go to our tip jar, WMF.org, go to the Talking Animals page, find us on the schedule, and put something in our tip jar in the right-hand corner. $25, $50, $100. Huge, huge help to support WMF and Talking Animals. This is TV on the Radio. It's Talking Animals.
Spirit.
live. Say, hey, I'm not going to go to that show. Why not go and support WNF and Talk Animals at the same time? $80 pledge gets you a pair of fabulous tickets to the show. 813-239-9663. It's a win-win, folks. I'm even using that cliche. Come on. So, or again, if you want to support us another way, go to the WMNF Talking Animals. Go to the WMNF website, find Talking Animals on the schedule. Click on that, find our tip jar in the upper right-hand corner, and slip a few bucks in. Why not? Okay, if you enjoy the show, enjoy the work we're doing, let's keep it going here on WMNF. So, also want to mention, too, that while we were hearing TV on the radio, someone called in and said... another thing musically that could have been sort of a name that animal, well, name that artist tune, I guess, would have been Bunny Wailer. Indeed. And want to do a little shout out to the House Rabbit Society, too, who were all sort of plugged into that huge network that Lana was talking about that helps rabbits when there's plenty to rescue, or just helps in the same way with their educational efforts and promoting their welfare. And there's a chapter locally here, so hats off to House Rabbit Society as well. So a couple other quick things, some news items or local event things I wanted to be sure to share with you that we ran out of time earlier to do. Mention this heads up again, just some events you want to make sure you get on your calendar way in advance, and this is one of them. Harry Hayward, wonderful man, terrific local musician, and big animal guy. True supporter of Talking Animals and the Talking Animals Festival, and he's performed at both fests, and facing a bit of a medical challenge, and like many great musicians, doing so without health insurance. So there's a very cool benefit that's been put together for to help with some of those costs on November 6th at Skipper's. Lineup features Ronnie Elliott and the Nationals, Dirty Spoons and Trash, Chroma, The Crash, Mitchell 5, yeah, Roger Sloan's band, the Florida Mountain Boys, and who knows, maybe others as well. So mark your calendar. That's, again, November 6th at Skipper's. And there's other ways you could help Harry. In fact, there's a website with almost that name. Go to helphayward, HAYWARD.com. And probably that Wednesday before that, November 2nd, we'll have some of those folks performing in to talk about stuff or talk some animal things or play some animal tunes, and maybe Harry himself, who knows. But anyways, be sure to mark your calendar and get out to that show and support Harry in other ways. If you take a moment to do that, it'd be great. So we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WNF Tampa. We'll be back next Wednesday, September 28th at 11 a.m. when our guest will be Jill Robinson, founder and executive director of the Animals Asia Foundation, a Hong Kong-based organization with offices worldwide devoted to the welfare of wild and urban animals in Asia. The interview is partly in anticipation of Jill Robinson speaking in Tampa on October 1st at Loving Hut Restaurant. So that's next Wednesday, September 28th. I hope you'll join me then. Also, if you'll visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, as well as archives and podcasts of past Talking Animals shows. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. Talking Animals broadcast outreach consultant is Libby McKenna. My thanks to her. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Stay tuned for Scott Elliott with the fabulous All Souls edition of It's the Music, airing next from noon to 3. We're closing out today's show, as always, with an animal tune, this one chosen with our conversation with Lana in mind. This is Ray Wiley Hubbard with Rabbit, taking us up to the NPR News, and then Scott Elliott and his great, great show right here on WMNF Tampa. We'll see you next Wednesday, 11 a.m. on Talking Animals. It's Ray now.
This rabbit. Ray Wiley Hubbard. Saw a dog was chasing this rabbit. It's on Sunday about noon. I said to the rabbit, you're gonna make it. I said to the rabbit, are you gonna make it? I said to the rabbit, you're gonna make it. The rabbit said, well, I got to. A woman's heart's a sacred thing. So what's a man to do? Try a little tenderness, Otis Redding said. Try a little tenderness, that's what he said. Cry a little tenderness, Otis said. And then he said, I got to, good God, watch me work. Now there's two kind of people in the world. There's two kind of people in the world. There's two kind of people in the world. The day people and the night people. And it's the night people's job. It's the night people's job. It's the night people's job to get the day people's money. Between the devil and the deep blue sea, between the devil and the deep blue sea, between the devil and the deep blue sea, that's where I am. I don't know what that means. Maybe it means I'm fucking cool.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Obama.